Hello and welcome to the Barefoot Coaching Make a Change to Make a Difference podcast. I'm Adam, and in this series, I'll be speaking to inspirational people who have made a change in their lives in order to make a difference for themselves, for others, and for the world at large. Expect real stories, insights, and wisdom from coaches and non-coaches alike. This is the Make a Change to Make a Difference podcast. Welcome back to the podcast. My guest today is Sue Schilling, Barefoot alumna and CEO of Alopecia UK. Sue's career is founded in over 25 years in global banking, followed by a transition to the charity sector. For the last 5 years, she's been leading people, culture and coaching programs in small charity sector organizations. Having been first diagnosed with alopecia in primary school, Sue found her way to Alopecia UK when she lost all of her hair in her 40s. She says that on reflection, losing her hair challenged her to find her strengths, and that despite it taking a while to get there, she knows she's a better person and has developed a kinder outlook on the world. So a massive welcome to the podcast, Sue Schilling. Hello.
Hello. Thanks so much for inviting me.
No, it's a real pleasure. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time.
Oh, God. So, I hope pleasure. It lives up to the billing.
Of course it will. We're having this conversation virtually and you're at home. Where are you joining us from today?
Yeah, I live in Macclesfield in Cheshire. I'm in a spare room in our house that's been converted into an office because I work at home most of the time. So I've got a very nice, kind office space here.
Lovely. And I've got visions of when I've been up that way, beautiful rolling hills and countryside on your doorstep. Is that the case?
Yeah, it's really, I live halfway up a hill, and if I look right, there are two rows of houses and then the Peak District. Oh. And if I look left, then it's down a hill into the bowl, Macclesfield in a bowl, and the town centre and the train station and things. So very different from where I grew up in South London, and it's a gift to be here.
Wow. Well, before we finish, you have to show me out of a window or something. Yeah. It sounds fabulous. So how's your week been, Sue? What have you been up to?
It's been busy. I have been at work this week. I work 4 days a week for Alopecia UK. I'm the chief executive there. And so actually it's been a really varied week. I have been in Shipley one day this week, Shipley in West Yorkshire, which is just on the outskirts of Bradford, which is where our office is, talking to a team member about the direction of travel of her career and what she wants to do next and what works for the charity in that kind of stuff. So that was a really good active day. But I've also been working on some projects where, as a charity, we are the voice of the patient representing all people with alopecia around the UK. I've been doing some really boring things. I should probably put a bit of a zip in that, but it's okay because, you know, part of my responsibility is to build our comms around our annual report and our financial reporting. So I've been doing some really boring stuff around that. And actually some really, really close to our community type things. So responding to queries in our Facebook group or a couple of emails from some of our support group leads, the stuff that connects me with the reason that I do the job that I do.
Ooh, okay. Now that's a beautiful lead in then too. Can we talk a bit more about that then? So you've said CEO of Alopecia UK. Tell me a bit more about the reason you do what you do.
Yeah, so you can see because we're virtually, but a listener wouldn't be able to see, I have alopecia. I've actually had alopecia since childhood, and it was always very patchy hair loss that I could always disguise or camouflage with my bio hair. And then in my mid-40s, over the course of about 8 to 10 weeks, I went from having a full head of hair to having no hair anywhere on my body, which was very, very distressing. And I'm sure we'll explore some of that later in the conversation because it's really some really important lifestyle choices as a result of that. But I found the charity right way back in 2016 when I was in distress, when I was a person in need of help, when I needed educating and people around me. And so I got involved with the charity as a volunteer originally and a fundraiser originally, and then was brought in by my predecessor to allow her to be freer to go off to her next opportunity and her next role. So I've only been in role as CEO for about a year. I've been employed by the charity about 18 months. So very new, very exciting. But, you know, the why is because I can help people like me and because I've got lived experience. I get it.
I love that. And also, I'm thoughtful about how special that is, actually, to be so connected with the work that you do for all of those reasons you described.
Yeah, it is really special, but it also requires quite a lot of resilience because being somebody who looks different than the general populace, being somebody who is therefore somehow separate from many people in the population can be isolating. And when you spend your career listening to people who are feeling the same, I have to work quite hard to not let other people's emotions validate things that I've already worked through. So I work quite hard on the positive aspects of having a visible difference. And for me, that is about how people have responded to me over time. I've developed this really lovely view of the world that generally people are kind and generally people are curious rather than malicious when they're asking me about my hair loss. And it gives me a really lovely opportunity to talk to them about what it's like to be different and to be curious about them and have a level of empathy for anybody with any difference away from the mainstream that I never thought that I would collect in my soul. It's been a real gift for me. Don't get me wrong, if I could have my hair back tomorrow and if my hair could come back tomorrow evenly and looking like it did before, then I absolutely would have it. But I've collected this sense of wonder in the world and kindness in the world as a result of this alopecia journey.
It's beautiful. And you reminded me of something I read about you as we were preparing for this conversation. And this is actually taken from the Alopecia UK website. You said that on reflection, losing your hair challenged you to find your strengths. And that despite it taking a while to get there, you know that you're a better person and have a kinder outlook on the world as a result.
I think that's right. I think anybody who is different some way stands out. Anyone with a visible difference, as well as dealing whatever's going on with emotionally, they're dealing with a lot of stigma, a lot of psychological distress. And my experience is similar to others. I got to the stage where I would look in the mirror and wonder who it was looking back at me. Certainly when I lost my lashes and my eyebrows, I didn't recognise the woman who was staring back at me. So I really dug into... Actually, I used quite a lot of coaching around that time. I had tons of therapy to really dig into that core of, you know, what's going on? Why don't I recognise this woman in the mirror? I know that I have the resources within me to find her, but why can't I? What's so difficult? And really, there's a lack of control that you have to accept, I think.
Mm. And it sounds like you've had to do work then to get there. And I'm wondering, after having done the digging, where you arrived?
Really good question. I have done loads of work. And where I've arrived is, I am going to use the word acceptance, but I really don't like it because I don't like to give this perception out into the world that I want to remain as a person with alopecia. Because as I said earlier, I'd like my hair back if I could have it. But I am accepting of my place in the world, my strength of character, that I look different. That means from time to time people will be curious, and that means that from time to time people will say things that are mean, very rarely, but sometimes, but that I have the resources. I've done quite a lot of work on my strengths. I have the resources to be able to reflect back at them in a way that means that I'm not being intimidating, but I'm being more curious. I guess, God, you've asked me a really good question, Adam. I guess it's embedded, all that work has embedded the power of my innate curiosity. Mm. Because I really wonder why is it an issue for you that I look different? Or why are you asking me if I've had cancer treatment? Well, the answer is probably because you know someone who has and they're a survivor and you want to tell me a really nice positive story. So I choose to collect. My curiosity allows me to collect good things in the world.
Yeah, and flip it, which I can appreciate can at times be difficult. But I suppose it goes back to one of the things that we teach on the Barefoot Programme, isn't it? We try to hold other people in positive regard.
Yeah.
And then I add to that and then have them prove us right.
Yeah. I think that's right. And I think it's lovely. And I truly believe the world is a good place. I know that there are some idiots and some mean people and some really, truly horrible people. But I truly believe that the majority of people in the world are good and working with positive intent.
Yeah. Let's carry on the coaching line for a minute. So I got a sense from listening to you that coaching has potentially been helpful for you in your alopecia journey, and I imagine also hopefully within your work as a CEO.
Yeah.
Talk to me a bit more about that.
Yeah, I'm going to go back even a little bit before the alopecia thing, actually. I'm going to go back to the reason that I landed at Barefoot, if that's all right,
because
I think it's really relevant to that. My career history is in financial services sector, 27 years in banking, in either the city or a couple of years in New York, which was fun. And I really loved my banking career. I really, really loved it. It afforded me life experience and lots of energy and adrenaline and frenetic working life. And if you are a listener, you're not seeing me roll my hands and my shoulders to demonstrate the energy, but that's how I felt. I really, really loved it. And then as a result of some change in one of the organisations I was working for, I experienced something very close to full breakdown. And I was really poorly, mental health-wise, I was really, really poorly. On reflection, many, many months later, after probably a year of doing the Barefoot course and other things, I know that I had a massive values disconnect with what was happening, and the tension that was causing me was just too intense. And so because of that breakdown, I eventually manoeuvred an exit from the firm that I was in. I spent 6 months in my garden painting, my poor husband building pots out of wood and me painting them bright colours as I was sloughing off ick off of my body and off of my soul. So my garden looked like a beautiful pride parade. It was just multicoloured everywhere.
How fabulous.
And while I was doing that, I came to the conclusion that, of course, I failed as a leader. I must have failed. This is why I broke. I must be a rubbish leader and I must learn to be a better leader. And that's when I decided I was going to do some training and I was going to invest in myself. And that is when I found Barefoot. And of course, what happens as you go through that beautiful program is you start to understand what was the trigger for this for me. Why wasn't I comfortable? And actually, my leadership style was completely fine when I was doing the job before. And so not just coaching helping me in my career after, the course helping me problem solve. Well, I'm pulling a funny face. Yeah, problem solve what had felt like a really intensely difficult time.
Mm. The values thing is really important from experience. Generally, when things are going well, we don't tend to dig too deep, do we? We just sort of go, well, it's great, I've had a really fab day. It's when things start to go the other way that we then start to try and unpick what's going on. And I'm really glad that you mentioned the values piece, because it is so important, particularly when we find ourselves with people in organisations where our values are juxtaposed. Actually, the result can be quite sort of shaking in terms of the mind-body connect. And yeah, I think it's really fascinating.
And I think, well, I know that before I'd gone on the Barefoot course, I'd not really invested in myself emotionally before. I hadn't, you know, I'd gone on leadership training at work. I'd gone on, you know, the odd management course. You know, I'd done stuff, but there'd never been any investment in, you know, who are you? What do you stand for? What will you compromise on? What won't you compromise? That, those values, how do you show up as a leader? That had never been an offering. And potentially that's a symptom of the time. You know, maybe the world had changed and I hope it's changing now more. But as I look back over the last 10 years, because I joined the Barefoot course in 2014, so it's nearly 10 years since I did it. As I look back over that time, I know that before that, I really hadn't thought about what are values, what do they mean to me, what is at the core of Sue Shilling, you know, how does that manifest in the world. In fact, if I look behind the screen, on the right-hand side of it is a list of my, not just a list, it's a beautiful picture of my values because they mean so much to me. You know, so if I'm having a hard time, I hunker down into them, actually.
I love that. I love that they've become almost a bit of a North Star. You know, go back to them, remind yourself of who you are, why you do what you do. That's beautiful. And no doubt will be benefiting the team that you work with as well. You know, how does it play into the conversations you have with your team? You said right at the beginning that you were having a chat this week with somebody about their career.
Yeah, well, I think it reflects itself from the sense of I work with my team in the way that they want to work for themselves. So I can meet them where they're at rather than forcing them to come to where I'm at. And I do that because I know that that's something I would have valued from people who, you know, I was working with at different stages in my career. But my very core value in my language is circular love. That is the absolute core of my values. And it means that thing about you, what you put in, you reap what you sow. And the more collected you are with it, the more circular you are with it, the more it will continue to feed you. And when I'm at work, because I do use love, the L word, at work, but many people don't like the L word at work. So when I'm at work, I talk about rooted connections. And that is the same for me. So how does that manifest in the people that I work with? I try and build good relationships with people. I try and make some sense of real connection away from what they're doing from their day jobs. I try and share I try and role model sharing my life and vulnerabilities so that they can feel safe sharing theirs. And I hope that makes our team a better place to work.
Yeah. I mean, Sue, I just want to reach out through this screen and give you a massive hug and go, my word, if I had a leader like Sue Shilling in my early stages of leadership, gosh, I mean, what would have been different? Sticking with the work theme then.
Yes.
Tell me about your role as CEO of the charity. What does it involve? What do you get up to? And within that, what's the stuff that gives you the most energy that fills your bucket?
So it's such a big question. So we're a really tiny charity. We are only 6 employees and 4 of us do not work full time, including me. I work 4 days a week. Anybody who has been a CEO of a small organisation, be it a charity or a profit-making business, will know that as a CEO, you're multi-hatting. So I am the HR director, I am the tech director, I am the operations manager, because sometimes I'm not leading, sometimes I'm, you know, helping people get their tasks done. And I'm the voice and representative of the charity to external tables. And I'm responsible for all the governance. This is incredibly multi-hatted facet to my job. And that can be really great, but it can also be really hard work because it means that there's always something next to do that is administrative or, you know, a governance requirement or can't be put down. But then there's always something else that I could be doing to improve and to grow and the stuff that you would do if you had capacity to do it. So I don't know how to explain it other than to say it is, you know, I'm the face of the charity to our, not just our board, but to our community and to our stakeholders. But actually behind that face, there's an awful lot of mundane multi-hatting going on. And what energises me are the events and the activities where we can be with the people that we are supporting. So our active community is about 15,000 people who have all got alopecia, different types of alopecia, men, women, children, all demographics, all sorts of people. We run events, we run support groups. And if I can be at any of those events or any of those support groups, that really energises me. In mid-August, we've got a residential for kids and their families. We've got about 30 families, I think, come in. There'll be about 100-odd people, including we'll have 15 volunteers who have all got alopecia. So they'll be role modelling to the kids and to the parents who might be confused about how to support their children or worried about life opportunities and outcome for their children, being at those things, that's what energizes me, because that's why I do the job that I do.
How fantastic. I love the idea of, yeah, modeling those behaviors with these kids and them looking at people that look like them,
yeah,
and feeling good about themselves.
Yeah, and at many of those events, we do a really big conference every second year, and we've just had it earlier this year, and we have, that's an adult-centric event, and we have people arrive with their wigs on, and that's great, and we have wig sellers there, so it's a really eclectic group of people. But then there will be people who say, this is the first time I ever took my wig off in public. It was the first time I felt comfortable enough to show somebody else what I truly look like. And then we have other people to say, I never wear wigs, but hey, I've bought an orange one today. Look how cool this is. So all of that kind of, you know, mixing it up and empowering people to live the life they want to, the way they want to, without that fear of stigma, that's a really big deal.
I mean, talk about values alignment work.
Yeah.
It doesn't get more aligned than this. And I really get that sense from you.
I think you're right. And I hope that I'm projecting this truth, which is that I'm somebody who's really down to earth and I'm driven by fairness. CEO is on the job title, but I don't think I talk in acronyms or, you know, I think I'm a pretty straightforward kind of person. And I try and keep it simple because I think that's how the world should be.
Mm. And Sue, how do people find their way to the charity? Are they referred? How does it work?
People generally find us through our website, which I'm just going to plug now. It's alopecia.org.uk. Why wouldn't I plug it? People are signposted from their clinician. There's no formal referral form. So most people find the website and then they see that we've got a private Facebook group. It's very safe and very moderated. So they come into that Facebook group and sort of get a sense of what's going on here. And then we'll ask some questions and generally take part. It's a really lovely peer support community. So people will arrive saying, I don't know what to, you know, it's been awful. I don't know what to do. Will my husband ever love me when I look like this? Or, oh my God, I'm not going to learn to shave with my dad. This is really awful. Those kind of things, and then they might join a support group, and then they might join a big event, and they might do a bit of fundraising, and then eventually, a little while down the line, in a timeline that ever suits them, they might do some volunteering and give back. So it's a lovely journey, I think, for many people. And I'm making it sound really fluffy, like everybody gets to acceptance and happiness, and that's just not true. And that's why there's a lot of work for us to do in making sure that some treatment pathways make sense and that people are treated fairly by their healthcare professionals and that society understands that discrimination for somebody for not having hair is discrimination. So there's some intellectual advocacy work that goes alongside this caring for our community.
Mm. So before we go into a short break, I was wondering, if I were to ask you the question, what advice would you give to people listening who, for whatever reason, feel that they are different or don't fit the sort of stereotypical view of what it means to be a person? What would you say to them?
I would say to them, first of all, I'd say, I get it, and it's hard. And then I would say to them, work out what you want to say to yourself. And that sounds really glib, doesn't it? And it sounds very therapy and coachy. But work out what you want to say to yourself. And that is because I think a big part of the journey of being different is building a narrative for yourself and then ultimately for the outside world. Because the way you talk to yourself will define how it feels for you to be different. How can you learn to say those things to yourself?
Yeah. Thoughts become beliefs, right?
Yeah.
So make it work for you. I hear that. Sue, we're going to take a very quick break and we'll just be back in two. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Adam.
You know, I was thinking, there really is no single route to arriving at the Barefoot Coach Training Programme, is there?
No, there isn't. People come from all walks of life. From the armed forces to aromatherapy, HR to hairdressing, and teaching to taxi driving. But regardless of where they arrive from, they all share the same desire, and that is to make a change, to make a difference.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. So whether people listening want to coach friends and family, coach at work, or in a new career as an accredited coach, when it comes to coach training, no two journeys are the same. You can find out where the Barefoot Line could take you by visiting barefootcoaching.co.uk. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Before the break, Sue, we were talking about how in your role, you have to wear lots of hats. You're in all sorts of work, frontline work, strategy work, promotional work, and then some of what I like to call the dull but necessary stuff. I get a sense that life is going to be full for you, right? So when it is full, how do you take care of yourself? What strategies and habits do you employ to take care of your own mental health and well-being?
That's a really good question. So first off, I run. I took up running actually around earlier in our conversation. I talked about experiencing quite a lot of mental health distress around leaving my banking career. And I took up running very quickly after leaving to find a new community, to find those rooted connections. So I've stayed running, and yeah, actually it's the timing's all aligned. The barefoot course, the running, lots of good change. And that's really good because that gives me good social connections. I live away from my family. So I'm 200 miles away from my family who are all in London. So running has allowed me to find really close friends and develop networks here. So that's been great. And I walk loads, and I've got a dog. So that sort of, yes, she forces me out into the world. She's amazing and I just adore her. She's a massive emotional release and give a filler up of emotion.
And what's her name, Sue?
Her name's Ruby. She's a golden doodle. She's 12 years old. She's just amazing. Yeah, really cool.
This is probably a good time to say that I've got my little 12-year-old Gracie with me today because she's been poorly. Oh. So she's come along to the recording. She's sat over there looking at me. So I totally get that. What a joy they are.
Yeah, they really, really are. And if you're a dog person, you really get that. But aside from the physical activities, I talk a lot. Sometimes I just take some therapy if I'm feeling twitchy. Something's got uncomfortable, something's going on with me at the moment, the world doesn't sit right. I want somewhere to explore this that is not forward-looking. I just want to explore this, and I will find a particular type of therapist for that problem, and I will go and have some sessions to unpick something. Sometimes I will talk with a mentor. I don't understand what's going on next. What did you do in this situation? How can I do it different? Let me explain what I've done. That kind of like problem solving. And then sometimes I talk to a coach. And I did that actually most recently when I took on this new job. It was a real part of my transition into this new job. I knew that I would need a space to get stuff out that was forward looking, that was away from my chair of trustees, who's incredibly supportive, but was away from work and felt completely safe. And I worked with Anna, my coach, for probably my first 6 months in this role. And it was really powerful and really useful, a really important part of that well-being. So, yeah, getting stuff out of my head, talking, is a really big part of my well-being pattern. Mm.
And a beautiful connection back to coaching, right?
Yeah.
So you said we're almost at your 10-year Barefoot anniversary. Yeah. And I think when that day comes, by the way, I think we should definitely have you to the office. And we'll get a cake or something. I know we'd all love to meet you in person. But yeah, gosh, 10 years. I mean, when you look back at your time during the programme, what are the things that stick out for you that have stayed with you?
I loved it. I loved every minute of it. So one of the things that sticks out is that an intense period of learning and gifting yourself the learning and the education and all the excitement that comes around that. My cohort, I really enjoyed the people that I did the course with. But what's interesting for me is that we're not necessarily in touch anymore. We connect on LinkedIn and people's careers have gone off in all different directions. And that's fine because in the moment it was what it needed to be. You were not where you are. So we were in a hotel in East Midlands doing this course. So I have some big memories of the journey over there and all that kind of stuff and decompressing on the way home, trying to work it out. But then there were, you know, the modules, I think, that landed with me because of my experience in the run-up to coming on the course. all the modules about the stress response, all of the modules about TA and how that manifests in work relationships and home life relationships. And interestingly, the one tool that landed with me at the time that I thought when it was first presented, thought was like, oh, this is going to be really uncomfortable. But actually, I really get it, is perceptual positions. And I use it for myself quite a lot. Sometimes I will take myself away from this desk that you're seeing me in now to just try and think differently or be differently or imagine differently. Yeah, and if I'm going to be completely honest and slightly quiet, I thought it was a bit of old hooey at the beginning, but actually I use it quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, would you mind sharing a bit about the tool perceptual positions? Because you're right, this is a technique that we still teach now on the programme, a way for individuals to explore typically a relationship from three different points of view, your own, the other person, and then from the position of a detached observer.
I did some work in the years after the Barefoot course with young adults with difficult backgrounds, some of them through Youth Justice. I've used it with them to help them see that there are alternative outcomes, to give them the freedom to imagine something different or to hear the voice of somebody who might not talk to them, or to allow them to speak to themselves more kindly. So that relationship might not be somebody external, it might be with themselves over those three seats. But I think the act of physically moving is really powerful. It takes quite a long time with young people, in my experience, to get to the position where you can have that conversation with them to say, let's just experiment with this tool, let's just try it. Because, you know, you're putting yourself out of the comfort zone and talking with a coach. So that whole relationship with the coach, the whole letting them trust you enough to experiment with something that feels socially uncomfortable, because it is socially uncomfortable to talk about your inner self with somebody who's not in your life. Yeah, that rapport building, I think it's so, so important to get perceptual positions to work well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sue, this is a bit of a change of direction now, but having listened to you and heard you talk about your work, and you're still relatively fresh into your role at Alopecia UK, looking forward to your next 6 months, 12 months, what are the things that you are kind of want to get your teeth stuck into?
It's a really good question. I want to do something else on a voluntary basis. I think volunteering is so good for your soul. It's unbelievable. So I would like to go and be a trustee at another charity as my next big thing. And then I think the skills that I would bring to that are, you know, in my career history and in my passion for doing the right thing. Part of the joy for me of doing things like that is that it's always educational. So for me, it is always about learning. So, you know, if I were to look back on that last 10 years and the courses that I've absolutely loved, you know, the Barefoot course, I also did the neuroscience of coaching course with Amy Brand. That was just exploded my mind. You know, I've done some courses related to charity leadership. So at some stage, and definitely not in the next 6 months, but you know, maybe over the next 5 years, I'd quite like to do a master's. And I would do that for the joy of doing the learning, because what I did learn out of the Barefoot course, even though I enjoyed the learning with the essays, I hated writing the essays, but I did it. And, you know, so it's not for the academic rigour, but I have a new respect for, because of my work, I'm in touch with scientists all the time. I have a new respect for academic rigour and academic language. And I think I would relax into it more now than I did while I was doing the PG cert. Yeah, so at some stage I'd like to do something like that. I've gone off piste a little bit. I hope that's okay.
It's beautiful. Yeah, thank you. You've been so generous in your sharing. I've really loved that conversation. I wish we could carry on talking for another hour. So as a way of closing us out, what's the thing that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I want to mention the comfort zone. And I want to mention it because I think in the coaching sector, and indeed in the professional environment, we spend a lot of time talking about coming out of the comfort zone and driving ourselves into the growth zone. You know, lots of what I've talked about today displays that's what I've had to do. That's what I have done. And I've had lots of times when I've been uncomfortable and either been forced to do something different or chosen to push myself out of my comfort zone. But I'm under no illusion that being in the comfort zone is sometimes really powerful, because I think it's where you are calmest. I think it's where you rest and reflect. And because of that, I think that in a topsy-turvy way, that's where most of the learning really lands, when you're in the comfort zone. And I think as coaches, sometimes we don't, I'm speaking for myself, it's wrong for me to reflect on other people, but as coaches, sometimes we don't explore if somebody is truly stuck or if they've made a choice to be there. And as uncomfortable as that choice might be, maybe they need to be there right then at that moment. I've been thinking about it a lot because, you know, it's really easy in my work and in my life to carry on pushing. But for my mental health, for my physical health, for my intellectual capacity, sometimes I do need to gift myself some time in the comfort zone. And sometimes I would like the people I talk to help me permission that.
Sue Shilling, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, then be sure to subscribe to get alerts each time we release a new episode. Just search Barefoot Coaching Podcast wherever you get yours. Oh, and if you aren't already following us on social media, then do just search for Barefoot Coaching.